There's a grim anniversary just a few weeks away. 15 years ago, three young boys disappeared in West Memphis, Arkansas, and they were found dead on the 6th of May, 1993. Three teenagers, only one of them legally an adult, were arrested and ultimately convicted of the crime. 19-year-old Damien Eccles was put on death row. He's there now, but his case will head to court again on Monday or Tuesday. Now, normally, a court appearance like this might not be news, but the case of the so-called West Memphis Three has been the subject of two documentaries, a third is in the works, two books, and numerous calls for this case to be re-examined because many people believe the wrong people went to jail. A groundswell of support has come from local communities and even celebrities. I mean, just this week, Eddie Vedder auctioned off tickets to many of his shows, with proceeds going to the West Memphis Three's legal fund. Still, the convictions have survived multiple court and appeals. So what will happen next week? Mark Parisquia is a reporter at the Memphis Commercial Appeal newspaper, covered the story, and co-wrote one of the books about this case. Hi, Mark. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Good. I want to roll back a little bit because some people may not really know the backstory on this case. At the time, what was the major evidence that helped convict these three back in 1994?
Well, really, the most critical piece of evidence was the complete lack of evidence. These three boys were found murdered and dumped in a drainage ditch, a rainy weather creek that was flooded. They had a heavy rain, and there was the belief that the water washed away whatever evidence there could have been. There were no fingerprints. There was little in the way of there were no body fluids evidencing any kind of sexual assault. All three of the boys were found naked, and it was certainly believed that they had been sexually assaulted. There were few hairs, and so in this vacuum steps this young man, Jesse Miskelly, who is the man who confessed, and this whole case is built upon a confession. Now, the thing about Jesse Miskelly is he had tested very low on his IQ. He's borderline retarded. He tested in the range of 72, and there is so much of what he says in there that is inconsistent, or certainly was inconsistent with the facts at the time, that this created the whole underpinning for, that continues to this day, whether they got the right people.
There's also suggestion that perhaps Jesse Miskelly's confession was coerced.
Oh, definitely so. When Jesse was called into the police station, he was in there for about 7 hours, and over that time, none of it was taped until the very end, about 45 minutes were taped, and Jesse claimed, among his inconsistencies, that the boys were tied up with rope when indeed they were tied up with their own shoelaces. He also claimed that they had apprehended the boys in the morning, and when this happened in the evening, the boys were all in school in the morning. They were all Cub Scouts, second graders in West Memphis, and the police knew where they were, but the police worked through all of these inconsistencies and you can hear this on the tape recording of they're snapping it off and going and consulting and turning it back on. So this is, again, some of the underpinning of the case. Now, however, you got to know this, that Jesse had confessed several times. It wasn't just this one day. Perhaps he was coerced, but he did confess again to state troopers after he was convicted, who were driving him to the state penitentiary, and he confessed a third time as prosecutors were preparing to use him as a witness in a deal. The trials were bifurcated. Jesse stood trial by himself in early 1994. Damien Eccles and Jason Baldwin stood trial about a month later. They were working on a deal with Jesse for a reduced sentence and to have him come testify against the others. The prosecutors were faced with the problem that they couldn't use Jesse's confession against the other two, so they needed a witness. The deal fell apart. However, Jesse confessed a third time with prosecutors and defense lawyers in the room and a tape recorder running, and the story was substantially the same.
Now, you mentioned one other person who's sort of been a touch point in this case, considered, I guess, ringleader, Damien Eccles. He's the person who is on death row. Was there hard evidence against him? And also, can you explain a little bit about the anecdotal evidence against him?
All right. Well, there was really nothing in the way of hard evidence when you think of fingerprints or hairs or anything. The evidence that there was against him was that was presented at trial was he had, in essence, confessed. He had bragged. A couple of witnesses, girls in the town, came forward and testified and said that he had, at a softball game, had taken credit for this. Now, the defense will argue that, you know, this is just the bluster of a young man who wanted attention and was just trying to take credit for something in a boy's kind of way. But that is one piece of evidence against him. Another piece of evidence against the two of them was a supposed jailhouse confession by Jason Baldwin, in which an inmate in the detention center in Jonesboro, when Jason was awaiting trial, claimed that Jason confessed to him and told how he had sexually mutilated one of the boys. Now, that story is very twisted as well, as so many elements of this case are.
Now, has Damian Echols ever confessed to anything?
I don't think he ever has. I mean, he's made statements, certainly, as I mentioned, the softball confession, and there was some evidence that didn't get into trial in which he had supposedly, there were police statements from other youths in which Damian supposedly confessed to them, but certainly post-trial, no, he has not.
We're speaking with Mark Parisquia, a reporter for the Memphis Commercial Appeal, talking about the West Memphis Three. And, the story has got such a following, especially on the Internet, and people who are supporting the West Memphis Three describe that this is a horrible crime that just really turned a town upside down, and someone had to pay for this. And they went after this guy, Damian Echols, because he was different, because he had changed his name to Damian, because he was a goth kid, because he supposedly had these attachments to satanic rituals. You wrote this book, and if you go on Amazon, you'll know that some of the people who are critical of your book even suggest that that is concentrated on far too much. Is there any veracity to this at all, that Echols' appearance and who he was in the small community worked against him?
I think there definitely was. They had their target on Damian from the beginning, and that largely stemmed from Damien's experience with the juvenile officials in and around West Memphis in the period, some months before the murder, months and years. Damian had been committed several times to homes in which he, for reasons of he had been hanging out with a young lady. He had caused various acts that caused the officials to focus attention on them, and there were reports that this juvenile officer was receiving that Damian was into the occult, that he planned to sacrifice babies. There was a lot of hype wrapped around it, and when the murders happened, this juvenile officer went to the police and gave them his theory. And so I think it definitely can be said that they had their sights on Damian from the beginning, and it was because of who he was. He was different, and if you were looking for someone to pin it on, I mean, he is the perfect guy. I mean, the whole reason that Damian wound up getting the death penalty was because of evidence that came out in the sentencing phase, in which they released clinician notes in which Damian is talking to a counselor, and Damian was a very disturbed young man, and he said in the clinician notes that he was talking to a counselor that he liked to drink human blood. And this was a story that several associates of his would talk about, but he told the counselor that he liked to drink human blood, and that it made him feel like a god. And when that information was released in the sentencing phase, that is no doubt what cinched it for the jury and giving him the death penalty. And so it was his odd lifestyle, his difference, I think, that worked against him in many ways.
So we're fast-forwarding 15 years later after all of this. There's been so much media attention. What could happen next week? Is next week a big step?
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Next week is really somewhat minor, but important in the long run. It basically amounts to a scheduling hearing, and we will see this play out over the coming months, probably in the summer. Sometime soon, we could expect a large evidentiary hearing in which the defense could put on its new proof, its new DNA findings that it's been doing. The defense is preparing another new motion for a new trial. that will be based on the new DNA evidence and the claim under the Arkansas statutes of actual innocence.
We shall see. We might check back in with you once those hearings happen and the new DNA evidence is presented, the allegedly new DNA evidence. Mark Paraskia, reporter at the Memphis Commercial Appeal newspaper, thank you for walking us through that difficult story.
Thank you.